So it would not be an exaggeration to say that I wouldn't be here today, about to complete a full year of Yeshiva in Israel. If it hadn't been for, NCSY, I'll just give you a little bit of my story. Jump back like 6 years to when I was in eighth grade. I went to public Portland, so there's not so many Jewish options. I was in eighth grade in public school, and I was a pretty happy kid. And I started to do NCSY, had a friend that did it, he got me involved. And I really liked it, and I had a very positive experience. And I felt like a sense of belonging and a sense of like a good feeling. And after eighth grade, my family took a trip to Israel. And obviously, as you know, Israel has this funny thing where it like makes you open your eyes and get inspired and all that stuff. And it was really, it did that just for me. And I was came back and I was like supercharged, and I was wanted to grow and wanted to keep more mitzvos and learn more about my Judaism. But I was very conflicted because I was going into public high school. I was going to be a freshman at Woodrow Wilson High School. And public school values and like the values of religious Judaism don't exactly line up. And so that was an issue. And I didn't know what to do. And beginning of freshman year, I struggled a lot. I tried to find, trying to balance things, trying to figure out where a kippah, not where a kippah, this, that. It was a conflict. So God, thank God, gave me an answer, and that was NCSY. It brought me back to NCSY and really just gave me a way to stay connected. It kept like that spark going and turned it into a flame. And really, like, it gave me everything. Like, it gave me a social group, it gave me Jewish friends. It was really my connection to Judaism and throughout high school. And that's, I wrote it throughout high school, and I grew from it, and I got involved in the chapter board, and then I became chapter president, and I just kept growing from it, and I'm here. So Baruch Hashem, thank God for NCSY. It also was cool because like I got to see how friends, how my peers were impacted by it, and like so I'm from Portland, so it was very easy like see like the clear growth, like you could really see like kids change on a high level. And I remember like watching friends like keep Shabbos for the first time and go to Friday night dinners and say a bracha for the first time. And it was just amazing to watch. It was just amazing. Like I had a friend that came on an NCSY show, and he knew he was Jewish. Beyond that, I don't think he knew anything. And he was just like mind-boggling to see how like he reacted to different things. And it was just inspiring to watch others grow. And then on a national level, it was just NCSY is they're doing amazing things. They're fighting one of our biggest battles. They're fighting assimilation on the front lines. Rabbi Berg is heading an organization that is working to keep Jews. We have a 55% assimilation rate in the United States, and that's exactly what NCSY is fighting. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but last year there was like 37,000 kids impacted by NCSY. Like, that's crazy. That's 37,000 more potential religious Jews. And so I have a big Akar Satov, and I know other guys in the yeshiva that did NCSY have a big Akar Satov, and NCSYers all over the world have a big Akar Satov to Rabbi Berg and everything that he's done for us and for the Jewish world. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Rabbi Berg.
All right. Well, after that introduction, any questions?
I don't really think I could top that. That was fantastic. And I think that was an important story. I mean, just, you know, because how many people here from New York and New Jersey? Raise your hand. Right. So for those of you like myself who grew up in New York and New Jersey, just to understand what it takes in Portland, Oregon, to make that kind of commitment to come to Yeshiva, you can't even begin to imagine. You know, for most of us, it's in our culture just to decide which yeshiva to go to, not really a question whether to go to yeshiva or not. And you're very lucky. I mean, you have Meira Spivak. We have an amazingly talented person in Portland who, you know, you may know this, we have 250 public school clubs. So we go into the public school clubs, bring kosher food in, and we work with the kids there who are not really connected to much of anything. Well, Meira, actually, when they have falafel, that means that she sits in her home and makes the falafel because there's no kosher falafel store in Portland. And for all the other stuff, you know, I've been to their home where they take out all the furniture from in their homes that they could have, you know, 50, 60, 70 people eating at their house on Shabbos. So, you know, it's a tremendous chizuk to hear your story and to for you to have the courage to get up and tell it. So, yashar koach. Yeah, you can clap if you want. That's a good thing. So if I can, I want to just start out with a Dvar Torah, too, and talk to you a little bit about NCSY and some other stuff going on.
And then when I'm done at the end, I'll take some questions. That's the awkward silence part where we stare at each other. But I'm frankly okay with that. So, but when I go to the girls' schools, so first of all, let me tell you what happens to the girls' schools. First of all, I have like 5 cups of water because everyone brought me water. And then there's always like the president of the Chesed committee who like asks me a question because she feels bad. At the guys' schools, there's no water, and they just sit back and go, watch me burn when I ask for questions. So anyone that wants to think of a question between now and then, that would be very, very helpful. Or we'll just have awkward silence. That's fine, too. One of the things that comes up a lot in the States is that you know Orthodox Jews make up about 10% of the population in America. So out of about roughly 6 million Jews, you have about 600,000 ostensibly Orthodox Jews. You know, how you define that could be a whole another conversation. But one of the points that people make is, look, you know, 600,000 is not a small number. Why don't we take all our resources and just put them towards keeping the Orthodox community strong, right? Why is there a need for outreach? You know, you outreach so much to, right, first produce one family, you got to go through, like, how many people in Portland didn't make it to Israel, right? So the question is, why do you put resources, maybe we should just put our resources into the Orthodox community. So I gave a shiur on this topic, and I want to share you just the first of our Torah from that shiur, which I think is really important to understanding the foundation to Judaism and how it was formed. The Rambam talks about in Hilchos Avodas Nechadim, he talks about the fact that Avram was not the first monotheist, right? Avram, there are others out there. You know many of them. Adon Rishon, Noach, Chanoch, Mesushelach, their fellow's name, Shem Be'ever, who ran a yeshiva. And there were plenty of people that believed in God. And then all of a sudden, Avram appears on the scene, and the Rambam calls him Amud El Sha'olam, the pillar of the world. And then he busts up the idols, and all the good things happen, and the Jewish people start. So the Rebbe jumps in and asks the question, right, which is a great, great question, and the answer is a little shvach. He has submission to the shvach, not me. But he gives a little bit of a better answer. The question he asks is, I understand. So Avram goes out and busts up the idols, right? Why didn't Shem Be'ever break up the idols? Right? Shem Be'ever had a whole yeshiva teaching monotheism, teaching about God. So why didn't they step forward and do something like that, right? Why was it left to Avram to take care of that? So he gives like some answer about they didn't really know, people hid it from them. Kesef Mishnah really doesn't like that answer for a lot of reasons. But then the Kesef Mishnah gives what I think is an incredibly beautiful answer. He says that the difference between Shem Be'ever and Avraham was that Shem Be'ever had a beautiful yeshiva, probably looked a lot like this, some tables, a room, had some books, right? And if you walked into the yeshiva, they would teach you all about God. They would teach you about monotheism, all the good things that go along with that. But if you were outside the yeshiva, okay, that was, you know, you didn't really get that knowledge. When Avraham Avinu came along, he stood up on a chair and screamed at the top of his lungs that Kadosh Baruch Hu exists. He knew that truth to be so real that he didn't care what the rest of the world said. He busted up the idols and he screamed out that God is important and everyone, not just people in the yeshiva, that everyone in the world had to take note. And that's the start of the Jewish people. The start of the Jewish people was with someone standing up and being proud of their relationship with God and talking about it. You know, so many times it's hard for us to do that. The Shulchan Aruch talks about it when it talks about being Az Kanomer, right? Bold as a leopard. If someone's making fun of you, you shouldn't be embarrassed. Meitin Shmon Esrei and Benchi, so many places, Glow Nebosh, Leikon Moved, shouldn't be embarrassed over and over again. Because that's what it means to be a Jew. What it means to be about a Jew is to not just keep it inside, but to share it with the world. And there are so many people, as you just heard, that could use that sharing. And all of you are really in that place to go back and to share. Because you don't really exist in most places, right? In NC SWI, we have 15 and 16-year-olds. And for 15 and 16-year-olds, there's one thing that they look up to more than anything else in the world. And that's a kid in college. Because that's the next level. So when they meet you, and they can hang out, they can have a good time, they can shmooze, they can play ball, but you also think Shabbos is important. You also believe in God. You also think keeping kosher is a priority. Try to figure that out. Because you can be a tremendous role model. And I'll take it even a step further. I do a lot of work with the OU. I also oversee much of the OU. And one of the things we do there is we deal a lot with politicians. We do a lot of lobbying on a state level to
to try to get funding for day schools because day schools are so prohibitively expensive. And we have a lot of partners in that. We have partners with the Catholics, we have partners with the Mormons, people that also are trying to get funding for religious schools from the state. So I was talking to one of the lobbyists for the Mormons, right? And we were talking about the fact they also have like a Olive Shut and Bet program. Right? If you're a Mormon, when you graduate high school, they send you out to missionize for a year or two or three, and then you come back and you go to college, right? Fairly similar to our system. So I asked them, I said, you know, you're sending out all these people. I said, what is your rate of conversion? How many conversions do you actually produce for the kids you're sending out? And he said, I don't know. So what do you mean you don't know? He said, well, we've never really looked into it. I said, isn't that your whole reason for doing it? He says, no. He said, we don't really care how many converts we produce. We care about what it does for our kids. Right? Because if our kids are going out day after day for 2 to 3 years and pitching the Mormon religion, it internalizes it into themselves. So for so many of us, you know, that are Orthodox, the fact that we talk to people who are not Orthodox, the fact that we get asked fundamental questions about what we think, about what we believe, and we have to articulate it, it strengthens us just if not as much, if not more than it does the person that we're trying to affect. So if I can, I want to tell you a quick story that I usually tell in many places. I think it's an important story, and follow it up with the Dvar Torah, which speaks to what we try to accomplish. So the story is that there were many different times in our history where we were persecuted. And during those times of persecution, you know, we just had Yom HaTzimut here in Israel. During those times, many things happen that we can't question. People have to make very tough choices that you and I don't have to make today. And there was a family that had to make a choice like that, where they had to decide whether to hide their child or keep their child. There was a good chance that they would get killed. So they placed the child with a Gentile family and hoped for the best. And the child grew up not knowing that he was Jewish. Anyway, fast forward a few years, the child got the best education. The child never had a problem finding food or finding money or anything really. And at a certain point, the child came to terms with the fact that they were Jewish. They found out they were Jewish. And at that point, they had to make a decision whether to rejoin the Jewish people or to stay with what I like to call the strong force in the universe, which is status quo. Just stay where you are and everything will be good. And that child decided to rejoin the Jewish people. And we thank God every day for that because that child was Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was not brought up in an Orthodox home. Moshe Rabbeinu was not brought up in a home filled with Torah. He was brought up in a place exactly the opposite, the palace of Paro. And as Moshe makes that decision and he runs away into the wilderness and he becomes a shepherd there, he's out walking and he comes upon, you know the story, the burning bush. And he starts to talk with God, and basically God's telling him, you got to go back, you got to do this thing. Moshe's like, I can't, I'm not the guy. Back and forth, back and forth. And all of a sudden, there's like a break in the action, and Moshe says, well, okay, if I do this thing, which name of God should I be telling them that I'm coming on behalf of? And Hashem says, oh, that's easy, say, tell them, eh, yes, or eh, yeah. What will be is what will be. And then they go on in the conversation. Now, it's clear that Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what question was being asked and what the answer that was being given. What's also clear is that the rest of us have absolutely no clue. It's not a name we find anywhere else. What cryptic message was being conveyed between them? So, I'd like to tell you an answer. This is something I call a holy Dvar Torah. And I don't use that phrase lightly. But this is a Dvar Torah that was set over by the Eish Kodesh, who was an individual that in the Warsaw Ghetto used to give chizuk to Jews there. And he gave this drasha 70 years ago in the Warsaw Ghetto. And we have it today because it was buried in like a milk bottle underneath. And we found it after the destruction of the Warsaw Ghetto, after he was killed, HaKiddush Hashem. So he gave the following drasha and he told them that when people look at their lives, there are really two kind of perspectives, two prisms that they look at it through. The first one is present, right? I'm sitting here, I'm listening to some guy, maybe he's interesting, maybe he's not. This is what's going on right now. The second way we look at our lives is in the past, right? I came from here, my family, my schooling, all that those different things. The Eish Kodesh said there's a third way to look at your life, which most people do not use. And he said, that's the future. And he said, when Hashem was talking to Moshe, he said, Moshe, I understand that you're a shepherd. You live in your father-in-law's house. You don't have much going on right now. But Moshe, you need to know, what could be, how you can be great. And Moshe, when you go to Klal Yisrael, when you go down to Egypt, and they start saying, we're slaves, we can't, you need to tell them, you have to know that you could become the Jewish people, you could become one of the greatest nations in the world. Because it's about showing someone who they can become. And that's, in effect, what we do. When we have advisors, you know, a couple of years ago, I was in Michalá giving a similar speech at Crude Advisors, and one of the girls came up to me and told me she's from Chicago, she's in public school, and you know, I was like, all taken back, because I knew that Michalá is very hard to get in for public school, and if you want to get in, you have a whole curriculum your senior year you have to do, and by the end you take a test, you're not even guaranteed to get in, you have to work very hard. So I asked her a simple question, what I thought was a simple question. I said, you know, why did you just go to another school? Like, why would you put yourself your senior year through all that, right? Why would you do that? And she looked at me as if I was crazy, and she said, what are you talking about? My advisor went to Michalá. I want to be like her, so I went to Michalá. And sometimes it really is that simple. Because you don't realize the power that you have as a role model. You don't realize the power that you have as someone that puts effort into the Torah. We also talk about sports. Someone who can hang out with someone, have a relationship with someone, right? But also care about so many other things. That's the power of that influence, right? And in America today, I would say, I was at Rutgers a couple weeks ago speaking to the folks there, and they asked me to kind of talk about what the issues I saw in terms of Jewish leadership and Jewish community. And the one thing I talked about, which I think we're facing, and I think it goes across the Hasidic community, the Yeshivish community, the modern Orthodox community, is something called social orthodoxy. Which is, we're Orthodox because our friends are Orthodox. We're Orthodox because I grew up Orthodox. We're Orthodox because that's where I find myself. But we don't necessarily have that connection to God. And Judaism without passion, and Judaism without inspiration, frankly doesn't work. It doesn't work. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we're having today. And I'll tell you some interesting story, a little soul-searching I did last year. Last year, in my community, some of the schools came out and said that if you're on scholarship, right, if you're on scholarship, then you can't go to a camp and you can't go to a summer program to Israel, because that'll count against your scholarship. So I was pretty upset at that, and we joined with Ben Akiva and other people. I wrote an op-ed in Jewish Week, got me in a lot of trouble. But I felt very passionate that was a big mistake. But then I started to struggle. I knew what my gut was. But why did I think that camp, and why did I think that NCSY and all these things, why were they so important? What were they providing that other things were not providing? So I did the following. I set up a schedule of about 9 Shabbatot in a row. Where I was going to go to different camps and Shabbatot, all these different things. Right? Moshava, Morasha, Masora, camp in Austria that NCSY runs. TAJ, which is our public school trip here in Israel. I set up this whole schedule to figure out what it was. Now, of course, I walked in the first Friday night of those 9 weeks and figured out what it was, and then I was stuck with another 8 weeks, which was a lot of fun, but I could have figured it out in a couple hours. So what did I see? So I went to Morasha. It was the first place I went, but I saw this everywhere I went. I walk into Morasha. It's the first Shabbos of the summer. And they had not been together since, I guess, the last year, whatever it was. We walk into the dining room, so we're sitting there in the middle, and I look over, and within 30 seconds, all the kids are, like, on their benches. I don't know if they're doing the wah-wah-woo thing, or they're doing the ruach thing, whatever they're doing. They're screaming and yelling smiros and all these great things. And I'm thinking to myself, there is not a chance that any of these kids would be caught dead doing this last week. Right? What changed in a week that they were able to do this? And I realized, bless you, I realized that for camps and NCSY, there's this cocoon that kind of descends, in which cynicism and sarcasm is not allowed inside. And I came to realize that the opposite of spirituality was not being spiritual. The opposite of spirituality was being cynical and sarcastic. Because I was in Allentown this past Shabbos at an NCSY Shabbaton, and when a kid gets up to give a Torah, the whole place cheers. When a kid says that they're going to start keeping Shabbos, the place goes wild, standing ovation. It's a place where getting close to God is celebrated. And that's the challenge that we have in our community as Orthodox Jews. Our challenge is, you know, people sit at their tables, and quite frankly, you'll hear parents talk about the problems in the school, the principal doesn't know what he's doing, right? This teacher doesn't know this. And then they expect their kids to show up to school on Monday enthused to learn at a school that they now know is being run by Bozo the Clown. Because that's what their parents said. Right? That's the issue we wrestle with. And frankly, that's what we do in NCSY. Our goal is to inspire and to create an atmosphere, right? Exactly what happened with Avraham Avinu, we talked about before. That place where someone can get up on their chair and express, you know, their belief in God and their celebration of being Jewish and not be embarrassed. And in our organization, and again, I'm really here to pitch you to get involved with anything when you get back along these lines. But our organization has been around over 50 years. We have globally, we operate in South America, Europe, many other places here in Israel. We have almost 35,000 kids involved globally. And we have over 250 full and part-time employees. But the bread and butter of what we accomplish is over 800 volunteers. Now that entire number flips every 3 to 4 years, which is why I come here every May to give this pitch. Because I can't just have people influence, just anyone. I need B'nai B'nos Torah. So I come to Israel to basically to say that when you come home, this is something that you can actively pursue. It's 4 or 5 mostly Shabbaton a year. It's not complicated. But the one thing I will tell you is that I find that the people that volunteer with us get way more out of it than even the people that they're influencing. Right? Because of when you give, you get back so much more. So at this point, I'm going to kind of head towards the end here. This is the, you know, the warning for the questions. I know you've all been thinking really, really hard. I can tell by looks in your faces. So that's really it. We're here basically to pitch. If you want to get involved, let me tell you something else also. This is my take off my NCSY hat, put on my OU hat. Anybody here know Yachad? So Yachad, we work in inclusion, and we work in making sure that that kids with disabilities are able to have the same experience. We have programs at Moshava and Morshav and Torah, Nesher, and a bunch of places. We are looking for people this summer, and Yachad asked me to kind of let people know this. If you are interested in working in one of our programs in Yachad, NCSY summer programs, we send over 2,000 kids to Israel, but you have to be 2 years out of high school. So that usually, and we're all fully staffed. So that, we don't have any more spots. But for Yachad, you would email Ahuva Stern, her email is sternA@ou.org if you want to work with Yachad. And again, if you would want to work with one of our summer programs, we send, as I said before, we send over 1,000 kids on Birthright, over 900 on NCSY. We are the largest in North America, much larger than any other group in terms of sending to Israel. If you want to do that, generally spots go to people that are very active with us during the year. So you get active with one of our regions. We're passing around a list now for your contact info to get involved. And then we would kind of do that. So now I'm going to break for any questions. There we go.
What does it consist of to be an advisor?
To be an advisor, first of all, you'd be generally be a mentor, you know?
What's the job?
Have a pulse. What?
What do they do?
The job is to basically build and create a relationship. One thing you have to know is that high school Kiruv is very different than college Kiruv or adult Kiruv. High school Kiruv is much more about the relationship, having a good time, the friendship, than it is the intellectual pursuit. Eventually, we want them all to go to Israel for the year. One of the things, anyone here ever go to NCSY Kolo? Right, a couple guys here have been to NCSY Kolo? So let me tell you, okay, now that you're no longer in high school, let me tell you the secret of NCSY Kolo. You know what the secret of NCSY Kolo is that we convince you that you spent 6 weeks learning Torah. Okay? Anyone that's been on NCSY Kolo knows between the trips, the Teolim, the ball, all that stuff, right? You know, you'd be lucky if you get 2 weeks in there. But the bottom line is, you know, when you're 15, 16, that's what you need. You need that relationship. You need the ball. You need that camaraderie. And it gives you such, you know, it's such an amazing program. Rabbi Benavides is incredible at doing that, right? But when you get to here, 1920, you really can sit for the 6 weeks. and really plug away and do those things. In terms of being an advisor, again, it means making yourself available, means being willing and able to follow up. So if you come to a Shabbaton, there's a month or two in between Shabbatonim that you'd be willing to have a chabrusa through phone or Skype. One of the kids, stay in touch with three or four or five kids. It's become a lot easier through Facebook, frankly, to do that and to make that commitment to come down and. No one is asking advisors to come down and be able to, solve God and the universe and explain all those intricacies. We happen to have one of the things I think I pride ourselves on in NCSY is because we are made up of Netzar. We have a Posek or Sobolovsky, so we have someone that kind of answers those big questions. But really, it's about coming down and willing to be a mashpia. That's the main goal. Okay. Let's see. Oh, there we go. One and two.
If you were in Israel, and you plan on staying in Israel, how would you get involved in Israel?
There are lots of great organizations to get involved with. I'll tell you the issue. We have NCSY here in Israel, and NCSY in Israel works different than the States because in the States, obviously the goal is to get kids to go to Israel. It doesn't work the same way here because they're all going to the Army. We have four programs from NCSY here in Israel. The first is called Makom Belev. Makom Belev, we work with the schools basically to get kids to a point where they'll do Hezder, Mechina, or Shirut Lumi, a place where they'll go in the Army with a stronger background. Second program we have is called Araita. Araita is what I like to refer to as NCSY for hoodlums. We're in 8 development towns. They're kids that are in trouble with the police, and the Army will not take them, and that will ruin their life. So we work with them to get them into the Army. The third program we have is something called Zula. Zula is a drop-in center in downtown Yerushalayim. It's open all night Saturday night, all night Thursday night. It's for kids that are off the derech. Kids are into prostitution, drugs, all kinds of other stuff. And we basically counsel them and work with them. We have social workers from the Jerusalem municipality. The final program we run is called Mashiva Ruach. Mashiva Ruach, we educated 16,000 soldiers last year in Gush. We create a program. I don't know if you know this. The Israeli Army, you have to give 5 days of education a year. But they could be anything. So we created a program where soldiers can come to Gush and learn with some of the guys there. And what's interesting is, they'll say, what the problem with the Orthodox is? You don't go to the Army. And the guy in Gush says, what are you talking about? I'm an officer. So there's a whole another aspect to that. That's another program. Now, let me tell you the common denominator for all these programs that we do. You have to be Israeli to run them. As a matter of fact, except for our one director general, I don't think any of our guys speak English. I speak to them in Hebrew. So to be involved in those types of things, you really have to be a native speaker, culturally or otherwise, to get involved. Other than that, I would say, if you are going to make Aliyah, which is fantastic, there are a lot of great organizations to work with here. Probably not as much us, if unless you're, Israeli or your Hebrew is that proficient. Yeah.
How old do you have to be an advisor?
1 year out of high school. 1 year out of high school. To be on summer programs, 2 years out of high school, which is not really an issue for most of you. By the time you come back, you're eligible. Yeah.
If you go back and you're from more from background, have you not go back and scare off the JSU kids? They see you maybe as more higher religious level.
Well, look, I would say that Mira Spivak is one of the. We joke, she still thinks she's in Madrasdorf, even though she's. Am I joking? She's like the firmest woman I know. She's got like a billion kids, and JSU kids love her. I don't think it's necessarily a function of, how religious you are. I think it's a function of how you conduct yourself, Like, if you walk into a club and talk to these kids and they don't wash your pizza and you smack them, so that's bad. You need to approach it as much. I don't think it matters. I mean, we've had advisors of Strimals, we've had all kinds of, colors of the rainbow, and... at the end of the day, it just matters if you can hang out with the kids and be real, I think that's it. And the other thing is, for Tokoko, you can't, obviously yell at a kid or anything, but if you have a good relationship, then you can tell them stuff. When I was close to certain kids, so they'd be like, oh, can we do this? I was like, yeah, sure, if you don't mind going to hell, You could joke like that if you know the kid. If you don't know the kid, then you have to be a little more careful. If you just walked up to someone the first time and said that, you wouldn't be happy. So that's, I think a lot of it has to do with that. It has to do with your relationship. If you have a solid relationship, then, you can be frank and open and anything. Discuss anything. Yeah?
Is there a difference between how NCSY is outreach and Chabad is outreach?
Yeah, I think there is, actually. I don't know if I would have answered this the same way until I spent a day in Crown Heights a couple weeks ago. And I'll tell you what it was. I mentioned before we're trying to get funding from the state. So because we're trying to get funding from the state, one of the things, Orthodox Jews, one of the problems that we have is, it's not going to shock you, is that we don't have a tremendous sense of optimism always on issues. But when we're going to state government to get money for tuition, there's no reason we can't come together. You know, we had a meeting in Southern Jersey recently where we had the Syrian community deal, the Lakewood community, and the Modern Orthodox community of Teaneck and Englewood. And everyone came to the meeting to talk about how to lobby. So that's like the one area I'm finding, which is why I find it so fascinating, is that we can get everyone together is when we're dealing with, you know, with state government or federal government, things like that. So anyway, we went down to Chabad, met with them for 2.5 hours with all the heads of their schools in Crown Heights to talk about how to do get out the vote and various things. And, you know, it was interesting. One of the guys that, so we got to talk about public school clubs. They knew that we did JSU and all those things. And he asked us, this is the head of their community relations council, he asked us, he said, you know, the Rebbe was very big on a moment of silence that people can contemplate and spirituality and all that stuff. Can we get that done in public schools, you know? And I thought it was interesting, just an interesting approach. It's not an approach I necessarily would have taken, but I suspect that their approach is more, universalistic, if that's a word, in terms of getting people to feel very positive about Judaism, but sometimes may not, you know, be as focused on, you know, the Shiris Mitzvahs. Not that they don't appreciate it, but I think the approach might be a little wider and broader than perhaps ours is. You know, in NCSY, we have a database. Every kid from Portland to Jackson to, you know, to Dallas that is an event is in our database, and we're trying to figure out how to get them to Israel, how to get to those next things, you know? So I think the difference might be a little bit more like that. I ran something called TJJ. TJJ, Jerusalem Journey, is a summer tour for public school kids. And we started it in 1998, guy Rabbi Barry Goldfisher, who teaches at Machal Maan near here. And we tried to figure out like what our goal was. You know, so we were running things. No one had ever really done a full trip for public school kids. So we were a little bit flying by the seat of our pants, you know, I can tell you that now. And we were trying to figure out what our goal was. And we came up with this thing, you know, because everyone's like, growth. What does that mean? So what we kind of said was, you know, our goal was tangible growth. I mean, you got to be able to touch it. You know, so either it's the kids going to daven, or they're going to bench, or they're going to put on tefillin, or, you know what I'm saying? That there was something like that you can touch. I suspect that Chabad is much more open. They have tremendous success, and a lot of respect for them. I don't know if you know this, but the Orthodox Union is the largest employer of Chabad shlukim in the world, because who else are you going to get to visit a kashrus plant in Thailand? So we actually have a very, very close relationship with them. But I think that's probably, as I see it, the difference. Okay. Thank you very much.